Hi, I'm Richard Westerby, and welcome to the IVF Daddies podcast. Today, I have my great friend Anna Buxton, who is a mother of three children through surrogacy, Isla, and then twins Art and Olive. Hello, Anna.
Hi, Richard. Thanks for having me.
Welcome. Like me, Anna worked in investment management for many years before finding her passion in helping others to navigate IVF and surrogacy. However, unlike me, she had a very different starting point. Anna, do you want to tell us a little bit about how you basically fell into doing what you're now doing, helping others?
I have three children through surrogacy. Isla was born in India. She's eight. And the twins, Olive and Art, are five. They were born in California. Like many couples who come to surrogacy, it was after a long journey with infertility. Ed and I, many years ago, it seems like, got married, knew we wanted to have a family, started trying and really quickly got pregnant. But very quickly, we then had miscarriages. And again, it's a really long story, but the operations that were required following my miscarriages led me to get something called Asherman's, which is scarring of your uterus and means that I am unable to carry a pregnancy.
Wow.
We had many years of operations, trying to remedy the problem, IVF to see it would work, and it just never did. And after about 3 years, my surgeon said, "That's it. I'm not operating anymore. If you want to have biological children, your only option is surrogacy." And we're going back kind of 10 years, and I didn't know anyone who had been through surrogacy. I really had only heard of the odd famous person. It was something that was very alien to us.
And how did that make you feel? Like,
I think we were devastated. I was devastated. Everyone just assumes that they're going to have children. As a woman, you assume that you're going to get pregnant and carry your own children. We were at that age where all our friends had number one. Already the kind of second children, the third children were appearing. We felt like we were being left behind. And I think one of the things that really upset me the most was that it felt that infertility had not only taken away our ability to have children in the normal way, but it had really put a pause on our life.
Yeah.
It was very difficult being a friend to friends who are having children, a sister to sisters who are having children.
Yeah.
And it just seemed to have taken an awful lot away from Edney and our marriage very early on.
That sounds incredibly tough emotionally and physically.
It was. But like I always say to people, surrogacy was not a choice or a luxury or an easy option, but it was light at the end of a very long
dark tunnel.
And we got there in the end.
Yeah.
So then getting back to how we fell into surrogacy, at that time, we looked at our options. The US was prohibitively expensive for us at the time. The UK is a really challenging environment in which to have children because of the legal framework in this country, the wait time. And we'd already been waiting 5 years for children. And the thought of continuing to wait, never know if we were going to be matched, just felt that was just going to be too difficult. And I think Ed and I were worried that our relationship was going to
suffer as well. I mean, 5 years of up and down, of roller coaster, of countless operations, it sounds like.
Yeah, it was.
And just,
it was a lot.
Yeah.
So then we started thinking, at that time, the only international options were the Ukraine and India.
Right.
And we said very early on that however desperate we were to have children, that would never come at the cost of another woman's well-being or health or even life.
Yeah.
And obviously we had heard awful stories about practices in the Ukraine and India, but they were our only options too. And we didn't really know many people who had been through it. You can't Google this stuff. This is too big and too important to rely on Google. So we decided to go out to the countries and look at the situation for our own eyes. Ukraine was very quickly ruled out for us. So in India, we visited three cities. We went to countless clinics, agencies, lawyers, specialists in the field, and we certainly saw things that we felt were not right for us.
So you were doing a ton of due diligence that you couldn't find on Google or, you know, on the internet. You actually went and did it in your own eyes. That's amazing.
Yeah. I think we spoke to a few people who had done it, but again, it just felt too big to take someone else's word for it.
Yeah.
We did find a wonderful clinic who actually knew a doctor in the UK. We found a wonderful agency and a wonderful lawyer, and we decided that we were comfortable with that. And we started that journey.
And that's how Isla came about.
And that's how Isla came about.
Where was Isla born?
She was born in Delhi, in a small hospital there. There were very little complications. We were really fortunate that the pregnancy was straightforward. Her birth was straightforward. Shapala, her surrogate, was fit and healthy. And we went out to India a few weeks early, so we got to spend time with Shapala, go to her last scans, which is something that you wouldn't normally get in less transparent places. But because we had fostered a relationship with the agency in Shapala, we were able to do that. But the big but with Isla, because she didn't get a UK passport, because if you're not born in the UK, you can't get a UK passport. But she was born in a jurisdiction where you don't automatically get citizenship of that country, unlike somewhere in the US. We stayed in Delhi for 6 months after she was born.
Oh, dear God.
Yes.
So you have a baby. You are both English. It was your egg, Ed's sperm, born in India, and you can't get a passport.
And we couldn't.
So you're stuck. Stuck. It's a beautiful place, but you want to come home.
We wanted to come home. And while Delhi is fascinating in many ways and beautiful in its own, it's also
maybe not with a newborn,
really big and dirty and congested. So that was a very hard time. And I always remember I used to take my brand new smart bugaboo pram out on the street.
I can picture you walking down the street with a bugaboo, people looking at you going,
what is that woman doing? People do not use bugaboos in Delhi. But we got home eventually. And I often tell people that story because actually India's not, you can't do surrogacy in India anymore. They have closed their doors to foreigners doing surrogacy there.
So you can still do surrogacy in India if you are Indian.
Exactly.
Amazing. Yeah. Okay.
And when the doors to India shut, the doors open to lots of other countries, you know, the Ukraine up until the war there, certain places in South America, some places in Africa. But unless you can see things with your own eyes, everyone can do whatever they want to do. But I would just also always caution people to don't put the blinkers on. You try and balance your desperation with thinking about what is the ethical decision.
Again, financially, that's a huge impact. You're desperate for a family. Again, I'm a gay guy. I was like, oh, let's have a baby. You weren't. And you'd been through those years of trying and then add in the financial aspect and then add in, I can see why those jurisdictions are, people are looking at going there, but it's a tough choice to say no, and I'm going to go somewhere else, right?
Yeah, I think it is really hard. And it's just making sure that you have done your own due diligence, that you know what you're doing, and that you have your eyes wide open. The difference now is that there are lots of people talking about this. There are organizations to help. There are many more lawyers, so that people do have many more resources. There's this podcast. There was nothing like this 10 years ago. So people have access to much more information, which is certainly helping.
And yet sometimes it can be overwhelming because the information is contradictory, or you don't know where to go and you don't know what's true or not. Yeah. So then you've got Isla.
Yep.
You're back in England. And then what happens?
So we always knew we wanted more than one child, and we really wanted a sibling for Isla. So we decided that, first of all, that the UK would be ideal. We were there. We already had her. But at the time that we were looking, the organizations that help people match with surrogates, so the non-for-profits in the UK, had closed their doors to people with children. They were only helping childless couples. So that was out the window. We were not prepared to try for an independent match and find a surrogate on Facebook. It just wasn't
for
us.
Didn't float your boat.
No. So then we thought Canada. And totally opposite mindset, because when we were looking at India and the Ukraine, we were nervous and conscious of the reputations of those countries. We did all the due diligence in the world. But when it came to Canada, because it was Canada and nothing could go wrong and everyone is wonderful there, we did no due diligence and just jumped in feet first. And again, a long story short, and I won't go into all the details, but it was a very challenging time. We shipped embryos, we lost embryos, we were matched with two surrogates who were women who should never have been surrogates. And long term, I think those women suffered. They were put in a position they shouldn't have been by an agency. We lost tens of thousands of dollars, 18 months, and even more heartache. And it was, I think that probably, I get emotional now talking about it. I think that was probably the hardest time. And just at our lowest, a friend said, you must meet this lovely chap called Richard Westerby.
Me!
I met you a bit, my knight in shining armor. And so we met, and Ed and I knew that we could not end this journey on such a low with Canada.
Yeah.
That whatever, we had some, you know, we had moved on a bit, we spoke to our parents. We said, you know what, enough's enough. We are going to go to the best and we are not taking any risks. And that's how we arrived at the San Diego Fertility Center. We had a relatively easy journey. We did two rounds of IVF there. We created new embryos and we met our goddess Holly and the twins were born 16 months later.
Amazing. So yeah. You went from the emotional desperation to have a child, going to India, having a child, thinking, my God, this is going to be amazing. We're going to go to Canada. And then almost back to square one emotionally.
Yeah. And it really felt that we had got back to that kind
rock
of low
bottom.
Again. And although we had a child at the time, which was wonderful, and we adored Isla, that desire for a second child is very strong. And we just didn't want to stop at one.
Yeah. Yeah. And so then, interestingly enough, we have had your doctor, Dr. Brooke Friedman, on this podcast before. You met her, so you did two rounds of IVF in the United States.
Yes.
Created embryos and banked those embryos. So did you, like, how was the process? Like a month apart, 2 months apart, 3 months apart? I mean, how did that work?
I remember we did our, because we had previously frozen embryos, which were shipped to Canada. But after that episode, we didn't have any more. So we decided that we would create, again, coming back to this, no risks. What is the best, safest way to do this? This was creating embryos in the US. So we did a first round of IVF. We got two embryos, which was good. But again, we just wanted to cover all bases. And we spoke to Dr. Friedman and agreed that if I felt ready and strong enough to do it, we would do another round a month. I think it was, we waited a cycle and then did one the next month. So in 3 months, we did two rounds of IVF and we banked four embryos.
Amazing.
Which just gave us a sort of moment to take a breath, think, okay, we're back. We've got embryos. We're in a situation where we trust our clinic. We were talking to, you know, wonderful agencies who are incredibly experienced, very robust in their screening of surrogates. And we matched pretty quickly at that time we were looking. The match times were quick. We matched with Holly within about 3 months.
And having gone through being matched with two surrogates in Canada to then being matched with a surrogate in the United States, how are you feeling? Did you have a gut feel that it was going better? Did you? Because you've then been through a process.
It was honestly light and day. I think the big difference, when we were in Canada, I felt that I was slightly having to coach the surrogates through the process and give them information. And I didn't feel that was my job because I wasn't an expert and I didn't know it. What struck me when I met Holly was that she understood her financial, her legal, her emotional, her medical.
Amazing.
Rights. She knew all of that. She was so informed. And it meant for a really balanced relationship between the two of us and Ed and her husband. it meant that, you know, we felt protected and trusted her, and she felt protected and trusted. It was just this wonderful balanced relationship. We moved very quickly in terms of she was screened and she was prepared for the transfer. So it just, it felt for the first time that we were given a clear and transparent and ethical pathway.
Amazing.
And that is what, as we talked about a lot, that is what surrogacy should be. There will always be bumps in the road, but everyone should understand what they're doing, why they're doing it, and have that clear pathway.
I think that knowledge is power keeps coming back. In every episode that we're talking to people, knowledge is power. People are empowered to make choices with all that information. Yeah. That's phenomenal. So then what happened?
So then we decided, now this is a little while ago, we decided for various reasons because of our embryos that we would have a double embryo transfer. And I remember, because I've done quite a lot of rounds of IVF, you become quite accustomed to the process. I remember Holly's first blood test, her numbers were quite high. And then her second blood test, her numbers were really high.
And her, by her numbers, you mean her
HCG levels.
If you've listened to podcast yes. number, whatever it is, that's human chorionic gonadotropin, which I struggle to say.
And in my, I didn't say anything to anyone, didn't say anything to Ed, didn't say anything to Holly. And in my heart, I thought, oh my goodness.
It's twins.
Be careful what you wish for. And a few weeks later, we had our first scan and there were two little heartbeats.
Amazing.
Yeah.
Isn't it amazing?
It is amazing. I mean, it's truly a miracle.
We yeah. both have twins. And I remember that heartbeat scan. Yeah. And I was just like, ah! And nope. I still do say that sometimes.
Yep.
And then what happened?
Then what happened? So we had, we were very fortunate. We had a very straightforward pregnancy. Communications with Holly were great. I remember her saying, I see my role in this pregnancy as one to look after your babies for you in the same way I looked after my own babies when she was pregnant. But the second is to manage you. My stress, I did not cope with the stress at all. And I always had to remember Holly had three children, young children, and she worked. This was incredibly important to her. It was not the only thing going on in her life.
Yeah.
And me texting 7 times a day, asking for updates, was not fair on her.
Didn't go down so well.
So she said, listen, we've got to have a plan. So we agreed that every morning she woke up at 7:30 when her alarm went off. So I knew when the call would come in. She would message to say, all is okay. The babies are kicking. And then when she went to bed, she would message me. So I did not hassle her. I just knew when the messages were coming in so I could control my own anxiety. Oh God,
that sounds a bit like me and my boyfriend. Message me first thing in the morning when yeah. you go to bed. Everything else I'm good with.
Exactly. And then we'd video call, you know, once a week or once every 2 weeks. But we found a system that worked for us.
I look back and some of the things that I did with my surrogate and I just cringe. I mean, I remember saying that to mine, can I buy you a gym membership? And she was like, I have one.
Yes.
I'm like, what about, can I pay you extras for or eat organic? She's like, I do. I mean, just, it's cringeworthy sometimes, but that was my first pregnancy.
Yeah.
And my surrogate was like, I've done this before.
Yeah. And I think it's really hard to put into words how huge and surreal and weird it feels to think that your babies, albeit in utero, are in this world, thousands of miles away, in someone else's body, and you have no tangible role in that pregnancy and no control. You can be there as much as you want, but you can't really do anything. And I think you have to, one of the things about surrogacy is that you have to trust someone, a woman, to look after your babies in the manner she looked after her own. And if you can't trust someone, surrogacy might not be for you.
Yeah.
That it's not respectful to try and dictate to another woman how she leads her life.
Right.
You can agree parameters, absolutely, and you can talk about all of those things, but ultimately, day to day, it is about trust. So I say all this with hindsight because I wasn't like that at all.
But it is. These are such amazing women giving us such phenomenal gifts. Mm. I probably will cry because I always do when I think about this, because it was my be all and end all. It was everything. And I think the starting point that you had, the starting point that I had, very different, but all of a sudden you're pregnant and then your emotional roller coaster is up and down. Are we pregnant? Are we staying pregnant? So that,
yep.
The calls in the morning, calls in the evening, I didn't have that. No. We had very minimal communication up until around the 20 week scan, because I guess she was worried maybe it wasn't going to continue. And then I remember being at the 20 week scan and the ultrasonographer, I think it's called an ultrasonographer, the lady doing the scan really was just not being, she was just being very cold. Mm-hmm. And Angela, my surrogate, was on the bed and I was standing there and she started the scan. I'm going to cry. She started the scan and we all cried.
Yeah.
And then all of a sudden, like the whole mood in the room changed. And she was like, do you want a picture of the scan? And then scan after scan. Yeah. Like 25,000 pictures came out. And I was just like holding Angela's hand, hugging, crying. I mean, these are amazing women doing this for us. I'm like,
I honestly pinch myself every day still. You know, I was eight that we, you know, surrogacy gave me the family of my dreams, but I also met two unbelievable women,
yeah,
who I never would have met, yeah, who came from different sides of the world, who, you know, who changed our lives. And that feels like an incredible privilege to have been given that. And it sounds crazy because I should have been able to do it myself, but I didn't. But I got there. And like everyone says, I know it's so cliche to say it, but when you finally get to your babies, the ones you have are the ones you were always meant to have. And the journey to get there begins to make sense.
Yeah. I guess it's all part of it's part of you.
Yeah.
And
it's your story.
You can't change it.
Yeah.
And I remember somebody saying it's not your fault. It is what it is. You are there. And then it's finding that team to be able to, you're in a very dark tunnel and they give you a torch, yeah, to get to the end. Exactly. I think that's so important. I'm just wondering, have you got any top tips for people? Because we do get messages from people who are right at the beginning of their story, like where you were, if not at the bottom, getting there. Have you got any top tips for them?
I think, you know, talking to people who have been through it is very powerful. Listening to other people's stories, learning from them, getting hope from them can be great. So if there are resources, something like this is an example, you know, ask you, who do you know who's been at this position? Can I talk to them? I think that is really important. And then there are now, especially now, there are great agencies, great clinics, great lawyers, that sources of people who've been doing this for a very long time and are very experienced and know what they're doing. And I think do your due diligence, speak to people, and then put together a team that is going to advocate for you at every step of the way and trust them to run that process. But you need to do your due diligence and you need to, you know, work that out yourself. You know, more than that, as I said, it's not what we would have chosen, but we did get there in the end. And one of the things, I know this is going to sound a bit smug, so I'm sorry to anyone else, but sort of, I think
you've really struck a chord for me in the fact that family needs love. It doesn't matter how it comes about. It doesn't necessarily matter on the genetics. Just children, at the end of the day, need the security of being loved and wanted and just being part of that family. How do you talk to your children about it? Do they know about it? Tell me more about that.
We've talked to the kids before they could even speak or understand it. We have made surrogacy and IVF part of the everyday language in our house. So Isla's nursery or our bedroom has pictures of India, likewise with the twins. We just always talked about it. I think we all know now that children need consistency and openness. The last thing a child needs is a big surprise or reveal. But yeah, it's just something. It doesn't define us as a family. It's not something we talk about every day, but it is just normal to us. And therefore,
it's part of their story.
It's just part of their story.
And do they talk about it with their friends?
Absolutely. They will say, you know, Isla will say that she was born in India, Tisha Parla, the twins, five. You know, if you ask them who Holly is. They know exactly who she is. I think with kids, for me, I've always just thought, you know, I wanted to tell them a story that we're proud of and that we tell it with consistency. And I want them, as they grow up, to be able to tell that story in the same way and to be proud of the story that
be ashamed and no taboo. Yeah. And it is so, it's amazing that your children are empowered again with the information and the knowledge and the transparency. If you were to talk to somebody else in your shoes going through what you're going through or went through, what would you say to them now?
I would say that you will become a mother. How you get there, we don't know, but you will. That it's not about whose fault it is, or it's not about feeling that you're not a woman, that you've done something wrong, that these things happen, but that you can have children, and how you get there, it's a journey, but the point of that journey is to have children. And when you have those children, you will become a parent. Most people who have been pregnant say to me consistently, they don't feel that they become a parent when they're pregnant. They feel that they become a parent when they have a child. And that's what we're talking about. We're
powerful.
Getting to having a child.
That's powerful. Wow. I think you're going to make me cry. Anna, you are inspirational. And like every day I look at you and think, wow, thank you so much for sharing that with us. And if anybody wants to reach out to talk to Anna, please just send us a message and we'll put you in touch with her. Thank you very much, Anna.
My pleasure. Thank you for listening to me.
If you enjoyed this episode and would like to learn more about IVF and surrogacy, then please subscribe wherever you listen to your podcasts. Also, please share and follow our social media handle at IVF Daddies. We are here to answer any questions and to guide you through this very personal process.